Well, welcome all. This is Thomas Cox with my co-host Taylor Sunderhouse, and you're watching, well, this is the episode Marketing Made Easy of the ongoing podcast Small Business Download. Small Business Download is dedicated to you, the small business owner, answering all of the questions you've got, addressing the problems you face on a routine basis. That gives us the chance to touch on pretty much every facet of business, and while neither Taylor nor I are expert in everything you might need to know, we're between the two of us pretty darn good at a lot of what you need to know. And the truth is, you don't have to be, you know, today's episode is Marketing Made Easy. You don't have to be a marketing expert or guru or genius to do good enough marketing for your small business. You just have to make sure you do some basic things right. And that's the level of guidance you'll be getting from us. One other little caveat, you're not going to be getting advice from us, at least not here live on the show. And that is because advice is tailored to a particular circumstance, and this is a podcast. So what we're going to be giving you is what I would call guidance, which is to say it is what should work, you know, 80 to 90% of the time for 95% of people. And that should be pretty good to good enough. And if you have specific questions or specific circumstances, or if our guidance isn't working for you, we, of course, would love to hear from you. So with that, let me tell you the outline of our remarks today. Marketing Made Easy, we're going to talk about what marketing is, what it does, what works, what to avoid, how do you craft a good enough marketing message, and how do you share that message with the world? And that should pretty much fill our time. And if it's something I'm not remembering, Taylor, you could chime in and remind me and our audience what else we need to tell them.
Yeah, so if you're listening after the fact, all our links to our social media pages, how to subscribe to the podcast, etc., all those links are down below. And I think this is going to be a great show. And you can always email us if you choose at info@smallbusinessdownload.com.
Yep, we will answer your questions offline. I don't know that we're going to take live questions today necessarily. And if you're not watching live, of course, you can type questions wherever you like. Just put them in an email and then we'll get back to you with it when we can within a day or two, probably. So what is marketing? Taylor, before we worked on this, if someone had said to you, hey, Taylor, what's marketing? What might you have said?
Marketing is promoting something.
You're promoting something. Okay.
An event, a business, a product.
Right.
My talents, maybe.
And what kinds of emotions come up for you around marketing, or used to come up for you in the past before you got good at it? I'll tell you, for
me, need or excitement.
I just felt awkward personally. Like I just found the whole concept of marketing vaguely annoying, largely because I knew I wasn't any good at it at the time. And I didn't know how to get better. And it just made me uncomfortable. And I suspect that a good portion of our audience is going to feel somewhat similar. They may feel like you, that it's an opportunity, that it's exciting, it's a chance to share the word with what they do. And a lot of them will be, well, like more like me, awkward, uncomfortable, not liking the fact that you have to do it, but do it you must. And this returns us to one of the ongoing principles you'll hear us say again and again here at Small Business Download is, as a small business owner, you don't just get to do what you like. You have to do what the business needs. Mm-hmm. And all businesses must be marketed. So what is marketing? Here's my claim. Marketing is all forms of one-to-many communication that create sales opportunities. I'll repeat that. It's marketing if it is one-to-many and if it creates sales opportunities. We might think, well, okay, Thomas, what's a sales opportunity? A sales opportunity is a one-to-one conversation about whether or not someone wants to buy from you. And so any one-to-many thing that leads to a one-on-one interaction that's related to, you know, whether your product or service is a good fit for somebody, whether they're a good fit for your product or service, timing, dollar amounts, those kinds of conversations.
So Tom, what's one to many? So if I send one email to many people, is that one to many?
Yes, absolutely. If you send a mass email or even a mass customized email from MailChimp where everyone's got their, dear blank, and the blank is replaced by their first name, and they each get their own copy that has just their first name, as opposed to one of these mass mails where 57 people's names are all in the to field, and then some yokel has to hit reply all, take me off this list. And then we all get hit. It's like, stop, shut up. That's annoying. Don't do that. But yes, anytime you send out a communication to more than one person simultaneously, and it's the same basic communication, that counts as one to many. Newsletters, any kind of social media post. If you host a gathering, that gathering is a one to many activity. View the one and the people who are attending the many. I do roundtables about every 2 weeks. And my roundtables are clearly marketing activities because it's one to many. And I judge the success of that roundtable by how many one-on-one conversations come out of it.
Gotcha.
Right.
Gotcha. So email, social media posts.
Right.
Anything that reaches almost the masses, it sounds like, or reaches more than one person.
Little tiny masses maybe, or great big masses or whatever. If you get mentioned in the newspaper, hopefully in a positive way, that might qualify. That's either public relations or marketing, depending on how you want to define that. We're not going to split hairs today. Let's just say if you're engaged in a one-to-many conversation or one-to-many outreach or one-to-many communication attempts, that qualifies as marketing for us, which then, okay, what should it do? Well, if it should, number one, your marketing messages and communication should resonate with your target buyers and should repel non-buyers. I'll repeat that. Good marketing is going to both attract the good fit people and should repel people who are a bad fit. So if you have a weight loss service, your marketing should attract people who want that and should repel people who don't want it. Someone who's got issues with not eating enough or not being able to keep on the weight, or someone who's really looking for their next exercise regimen, but their weight's fine, they might not be the best fit for you. And so the marketing message that attracts someone to your law firm because you're a personal injury law firm, you should talk to people who've been recently injured and not people who are just tire kicking. And so that's one of the things marketing could and should do. You also want marketing to set appropriate expectations. It will not do you any favors if you overpromise in the marketing phase and then have to sort of bring people back to reality during the sales conversation because they thought that they could get the moon for a dollar and all you're selling them is a moon pie for $10.
I was always told, Tom, under-promise and over-deliver. Yeah. So if I deliver more than what was originally advertised, that's great.
Yeah, if I deliver less,
than what was advertised, then I'm not in so much good shape.
You're not going to get good testimonials. You're not going to get repeat business. People will feel let down by what you eventually end up delivering as your value rather than being excited by what you delivered. Now, so resonating with the right people, repelling the wrong people, setting correct expectations. And what else? It's got to emotionally appeal to the pains or the aspirations of the buyer. This was very hard for me. I wanted to be logical in my marketing and my selling. It turns out nobody, including me, buys logically. We rationalize logically. We buy emotionally. My late father used to smoke a particular cigarette. He was very loyal to this brand of cigarette. I don't advocate anyone should ever smoke, but he started smoking as a teenager. And he picked the cigarette because he thought it made him look like a riverboat gambler. And I thought, that is the most romantic, silly, charming, nonsensical thing. But he was loyal to that brand because of how he thought it made him look. And it's some sort of an emotional aura around that cigarette. It's like, on the one hand, it's nonsense. On the other hand, I guess that's kind of what we do. You know, how many people buy a BMW or a Mercedes in part because of what it will make other people think and feel about them as the person who has that car?
Yeah, I'll be honest with you, Tom. I'm a tech guy. And I probably buy six things and I'll do the same thing. You know, so there's no logic to it.
Right.
I felt like I needed it, but in reality, I got six things that do the exact same thing. What do I need that one for?
But there's something about it that was attractive to you at an emotional level.
Right. Right.
And exactly. So don't shy away from that and do get in touch. I mean, you can talk to your current buyers. You can try to get inside the mindset. Think about when you buy things, what is it that attracts you to a product or a service? And or what is the pain you're trying to avoid, or what is the aspiration you're trying to achieve? You know, do you want to turn your $50,000 a year income into $150,000? I haven't told you how I would do that, but if I lead with that, you're gonna and you care about increasing your income, you would be tuned in and you'd be saying, well, gosh, I don't know, can you really do that? Tell me more. Whereas someone who's comfortable, well off financially, wouldn't be interested, which is probably correct if my service is geared towards increasing people's incomes. And so the good marketing message talks about their pain or their aspiration and tries to resonate with them emotionally. Now we'll talk a little bit more about how to craft a message in a minute, but that's what marketing will do if it's done well, is it'll start to hook people. And you can look and see what are the most successful people in your industry saying. And you can say your own version of similar kinds of things. You know, tax preparation, it's relieve the anxiety and have an expert on your side. Get it done quicker with less effort. For tech support, I mean, Taylor, the reason I would hire somebody like you is because I know my business depends on a technology stack that I myself don't understand and cannot maintain on my own. And that isn't as reliable as frankly it ought to be. And so the question isn't if it's going to go sideways, it's just when. And when my technology goes sideways, do I want to A, be scrambling to try to find someone who understands my stack of technology and can start to begin to maybe help me with it? Or do I want to call somebody whom I already know, and that person already knows my technology stack and maybe has been monitoring it and backing it up for me all this time and has promised to take my call? And if he's on vacation, has arranged coverage for himself. I mean, which of these two scenarios do I want to be in? And the answer for me is I want to be in the scenario where I have someone to call and that person knows me and they know my circumstance and situation and they have my backups. That's what I want. And I would love to never have to call them, but I need the peace of mind that comes from having that set up and prepared. And so you could speak to the emotions of reassurance, of confidence, of being able to know that I won't let my customers down because I'm running around scrambling, trying to become an IT guy, which I'm not anymore. You get the emotions that are in play there, right?
Yeah. I mean, it, you know, I'm learning as a business owner because granted, I'm a fairly new as an entrepreneur.
Everyone who's a business owner had better be learning. We've all got to be learning.
But
I'm
what
a business
I've
owner and I'm learning.
What I realize is as a business owner, I can't be the expert in everything.
No.
I need to rely on others either internally or externally to take care of things. Because if I try to become the expert in everything, then I spend all my time learning something and not really building or growing.
Buffing your expertise and not serving clients and delivering value and making money and feeding your kids and all that kind of good stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
So marketing is one-to-many communications. It resonates with buyers. It repels the non-buyers. It sets correct expectations and it appeals emotionally to the pains and aspirations of your target buyer. So what works and what doesn't work? Well, what works in my experience, and again, remember, this is guidance, not advice. Your mileage will vary. Things like articles, talks, and interviews about the problems that your buyers are researching. Okay. Because your buyer is going to go to Google or DuckDuckGo or some search engine, and that what they're not going to type in their answer because they're not sure what the answer is. They're going to type in a symptom or a problem. Okay. They don't type in aspirin, they type in headache. You see where I'm going. And so if you aren't providing aspirin, you're providing, say, acupuncture to relieve headaches. Your article had better be about headache relief without drugs and side effects. oh, really? Tell me more. Because I've got my headache and you're talking about headaches. Yeah, you. And so articles, talks, and interviews can help. Anything that reminds your potential buyer of the cost of not acting. Because one of your biggest competitors is inaction. You know, should I get insurance or should I wait a month? Well, waiting a month's really easy. I just keep doing other things and not acting. We're all of us procrastinating on at least some things, I promise you. So reminders about the potential cost of not acting. And a third thing that I think we should all try and do is social proof of your effectiveness. That could be testimonials, that can be case studies, examples, quotes from happy customers, Google reviews.
So Tom, I know, you know, about reviews, and reviews are good. Mm-hmm. You know, video, audio reviews, written reviews. So when I use kind of the social aspect of it, mm-hmm. are you saying like I can go find a news article that kind of fits the need I'm filling or an example that I'm filling and use that as a post, for example?
I would suggest adding a little value. So what you might do is, you know, find an article on, we'll go with headaches for now. So an article talks about the effectiveness of acupuncture for headaches, and you're an acupuncturist, you might share the article with a little cover note saying, hey, the main point of this article is that, you know, acupuncture has been found to be 95% effective in treating headaches without any side effects. But read the article for yourself. And off it goes. And gotcha. So you're telling people why you're sending it or why you're posting it. Hey, I'm really excited to see more people seeing the value of acupuncture for it.
So essentially you're referencing the article to prove your point or your
yeah. Your yeah. Theory. That's the kind of article you should be forwarding. Not an article that profiles your competitor. I wouldn't forward that.
Right.
We'll talk more about social proof in just a minute. I also want to mention what to avoid. And I had this wrong for many years. When I was more actively marketing my prior business, I did over 120 podcasts like this one. And I wrote probably 300 articles. And when I went back and looked at those articles with fresh eyes, I realized most of my articles were all about my process steps, what I would do with someone and how I would do it and what they should do for themselves. And it was all very detailed how-to stuff, which I love. I love helping people solve their problems, and you can't solve them without having process steps. But that's not what you should be writing about from a marketing perspective. Your marketing should not be about you and your bio and your awesomeness or your details of your unique patented 12-step process. It should be about them and their aspirations. Should be about your buyer and their needs, your buyer and their circumstance, your buyer and their problems. And the reason you don't want to go on at great length in marketing about your bio or your process is nobody cares. Nobody cares. They care that you are an expert and that you've solved their problem for other people. And if you can hint at your process, or you want to have a link out to some page that details your process, fine. You know, don't give away the farm, but it's okay to have that info for, let's say, 1 out of 4 or 1 out of 8 buyers who really wants to see the process before they buy. That's actually pretty rare.
Yeah, because when a buyer is looking at a marketing material, aren't they looking at it with the kind of the mindset of what is in this for me, or what can this do for me?
Yeah. How is this going to make my life better?
And then, you know, if you dive into detail about your internal process and they don't see it, the buyer doesn't see the value on how your internal process values them, then they're just going
to
go,
impress other service providers?
Yeah.
Who are you really writing this for?
Yeah. They're just going to say, never mind, and move right along.
There's a risk that you'll lose them. Correct.
Yeah.
And that's why you want to avoid writing about or speaking about things that aren't your buyer and aren't your buyer's problems. They say, writing and speaking, because public speaking, if you can do that, getting on a podcast as an expert, getting in front of a Rotary Club, a Chamber of Commerce, there's lots and lots of groups that have regular monthly meetings. Toastmasters meet weekly, for heaven's sakes. And they often invite in guest speakers because it's the same people meeting each other again and again. And they kind of like a little novelty. And I've been a speaker at Rotary Clubs and Kiwanis and Lions and various other service organizations. And if you've got the kind of message that can resonate, they would love to have you in. It can't be a commercial pitch, but it can be educating them about the problem space and the fact that solutions exist, and maybe some case studies about this person had given up hope, but then they were able to, you know, achieve their outcome through their own, you know, steadfast seeking for the help they needed. And that gets us now into the marketing message itself.
This is the exciting part for me, Tom, because like everything you said so far makes sense to me,
but it doesn't actually solve the problem.
Now the burning question in my head is, how do I craft this message to retract the people I don't want and to attract the people I do want? You know, that's the tricky part. So I'm excited what you have to say about this.
So and by the way, I'm not a marketing expert. I'm at best a marketing journeyman. And I feel like a good management consultant. I've studied the problem extensively and I have applied these lessons to myself. And so what I'm telling you is, should work for 95% of our listeners, at least 80% of the time. And if it doesn't, get in touch. You should always know who your ideal buyer is. So I'm going to challenge our listeners and our viewers. Who's your ideal buyer? Describe them in a few sentences. And Taylor, you do the same. Tell us, who's your ideal buyer for your service?
My ideal buyer is a small business owner who wants help keeping their technology or their technology stack operating, you know, safely and smoothly, and does not want to have to spend a whole lot of time messing with it, so to speak. Now, if we were in a different conversation form, I might use a little more different verbiage, but yes, you get the idea that they want to spend more time being successful in their business. They don't want to spend 2 hours trying to become an expert in something they're not.
Sitting on hold with tech support or searching websites for help articles to figure out why things aren't working.
Or just flat out messing with it, trying to figure it out. Right. You know, they don't want to waste the time doing that.
Yeah. So they want to be providing value to customers and reaching new customers.
Yeah. Which is what
all small businesses should be doing.
I think most business owners, and I will take myself out of the mix for a second. I think most business owners would rather spend 10 minutes to call an expert within the subject that they're struggling and let that subject matter expert take care of it than try to spend 2 to 4 hours to quickly become an expert to try to fix the problem.
Yes. You will get much further in life if you use appropriate experts for appropriate tasks. Yeah. And I think we all know that. So knowing who your buyer is key for you. It's small business owners. For me, it's medium-sized business owners. And so that's the first thing. And you'll notice I'm not getting into it's a single woman, 35 years old, with a cat. Okay, that's a persona. Please don't go down the rabbit hole of persona creation. If you start Googling marketing or start searching on it, or you've done any sort of study, at some point you'll run into this concept of a marketing persona. There's a time and a place for that. This isn't it. All right. All I'm looking for is the simplest description of the kind of person who buys from you. Here's an example. A mid-career woman. People of all ages who have teeth for a dentist, small business owners, or just business owners. That's a perfectly good description of a buyer for our purposes right now. And then the second thing I want to say is, what's the problem that brings them to you, or what's the aspiration that brings them to you? So, people of all ages who have teeth, who need basic dental care. That would be the two pieces. And then you create from this what David Fields refers to as a fishing line. The fishing line is a short statement. It can be 8 words or less even. I help people of all ages with their basic dental needs would be a fishing line for a dentist with a basic family practice. Or I help mid-career women who want to find love. And women who already have love aren't interested and men aren't interested, but that mid-career woman who sees herself in that description and knows that she's having a hard time finding someone to date or partner with, they're leaning forward now, right? Yours, Taylor, you help small business owners keep their technology working safely and smoothly. the people know who they are. And if that's of interest, they now know that you're the kind of person who helps them with their problem space. And that's what the fishing line does. And that's the beginning of a good enough marketing message. I'm not saying it's perfect. I'm not saying it's flawless. I'm saying it gets you in the ballpark. This a short description of who your buyer is and a short description of the problem or aspiration that brings them to you. I help CEOs who want their subordinates to stop doing their subordinates' jobs. I help executives stop doing their subordinates' jobs for them. I help boards of directors save a failing CEO. These are different fishing lines for different audiences, for different services. And so this fishing line idea is good enough to go to market with. You can put it in your LinkedIn profile. You can mention it in conversations at parties.
Tom, can have
it
used,
worked into, go ahead.
Can it be used as a tagline?
A tagline, absolutely. I or we help this kind of person with this kind of problem.
It helps relieving
headaches without the side effects of drugs.
Yeah, it helps the person understand what I do or what you do, right?
Yeah, it is quickly and simply as possible. And you don't even say how you do it, because that's for the sales conversation, right?
Right.
For marketing, it's just, are you the right person and do you have the right problem or aspiration that you and I should be talking? And that's it. Okay, now I want to talk about testimonials, because one of the things we said earlier is social proof is important. A testimonial is a terrific thing to have on a website. It's a great thing to work into stories. So I build a testimonial by asking a series of questions, and these questions will be in our on our webpage and probably down in the description in the video and probably a couple of other places, but I'll give them to you out loud right now. Question number one is, hey, current or former customer person, scale of 1 to 10, where 10 is awesome. How have I been for you? How was your experience of me or my service? Scale of 1 to 10, where 10 is high. And if they say 7 or less, your next question should be, and how could I have made that an 8, 9, or a 10 for you? What could I have done differently? And this is now an improvement conversation. But they might say 8, 9, or 10. Okay. Now that takes us down testimonial path. And then you'll say, super. Question two, what was the event that inspired you to contact me? Because there's always an event. I had a headache. I saw your ad. I realized I was lonely. Heard about my friend who had a terrible technology glitch at his work. And I was started worrying about these error messages I'm getting. And then I saw your ad. And so I called you, right? The event. So question one is scale of 1 to 10. Question two, what event precipitated our initial conversation? What decision did you then make, or what action did you take? Well, I called you. What work did we do together is question four. What work did we do together? And then five, what was the result? How is your life better? How are other people's lives or work better? And the answers might be, well, you know, you're an 8 out of 10, Taylor, and I got really worried with these weird error messages that I couldn't understand. And then I saw your ad about how you keep technology moving smoothly. So I called you and you set me up on a monthly service plan, and you went and did a deep dive diagnostic, and you fixed like three different things. You gave me a detailed report and you fixed all this stuff that I didn't even know was wrong. And suddenly my computer's running faster and my stress has plummeted and my confidence is up and I'm not having the downtime I used to have. And I couldn't be happier.
And therefore your business is more successful and you're on the upward trajectory that you want to be on.
Yeah. I spend more time with my customers and with outreach, and I'm not like fighting my technology stack. And what this is, and then you turn that into a short story, right? Mm-hmm. You take their quotes and you rewrite them in a smooth narrative, and then you hand it back to them and say, this is what I heard you say. Is this about right? Is it okay if I put this on my website as a testimonial? Because it sounds like you're pretty happy. And then you almost always say yes. And so those are the five questions. Asking those five questions builds what you might recognize as a hero's journey story arc. And the hero's journey is a big name for a small concept. It's just things were a certain way until one day they weren't. And then something happened because of that, and something happened because of that. And now there's a new reality, right? The hero was living on the farm and then heard the call to greatness and left and fought with the Jedi and then retired back to the farm, but he's a new person now, right? Or I had this anxious worry ongoing for so long, and I finally called Taylor and Taylor fixed stuff up for me. And now I'm so much happier and more content. You see the arc, and all testimonials have that arc. And I say hero's journey because that's technically what it's referred to. So those five questions will get you a testimonial in short order that holds together as a narrative. If you just ask people for a testimonial, they'll say, yeah, sure. And then they'll never send you anything. If you ask them on the phone or in a Zoom call or in person those questions and take notes and then hand them, here's what I heard you say. Can you edit this to make it be sound like you and be correct? That they'll do.
So if I heard you correctly, Tom, what you said is interact with them to get that testimonial. Mm-hmm. Don't hand them an assignment.
Otherwise they won't do it.
But if you interact with them and work with them, you're more likely to get it. But if I just send you an email and say, hey, Tom, can you send me a short paragraph so I can use as a testimonial? I'll never hear from you. But
I'll do it because I know the secret, right? I'll ask myself the five questions and send you the result.
Well, I'm just saying.
Most people, Taylor, will never ever come back to you. And there's your opportunity is find your happy customer. And you can do this with any customer because your first question is, how happy are you? And if the answer is 7 or less on a scale of 1 to 10, your next question is, hey, great. Thank you for being so candid with me. What could have happened differently where you would have answered with a 9 or a 10? Like, and they'll say, well, you could have given me a free beer. You could, I don't know. They'll tell you something. People have a reason. When they commit to a number, they've got a sense of why. And then you ask them to defend the number in a very non-defensive, curious way, and they'll give you improvement ideas.
A common one I hear a lot of times is communication. I hear a lot of times, they felt like, they weren't communicated to enough.
In terms of improvement preferences. Yes. Yeah. And in fact, that's so important. Customer communication is so important. That's our next episode.
It is.
We're going to do an entire episode dedicated to that.
It's almost like I planned that, Tom.
It's almost like you planted the seeds, Taylor. You must have looked at our agenda. So let's talk here in the final segment on how to get your message out, right? You've got a fishing line, you've got a testimonial. That right there is worth sharing. Maybe you're putting together some articles or you're going to get yourself interviewed somewhere. But you've got enough here now that you could do some marketing. So what might you do? Well, put together a flyer, a brochure, a simple email saying, hey, I've got a new tagline. I'd love your opinion of it to your current former customers, your friends, your family, your associates. People love that. They love to have opinions. And share it with your friends and family. Share it with your past and current clients.
Well, people share
it even with your prospects. Go ahead.
People also love to help in general, I've noticed. A lot of people have a natural tendency to want to help.
So. Yes. Yes. And the easier it is for them to do something helpful, the more likely they are to do it.
Yep.
I'm not saying that you're asking for referrals, although you're open to that. What you're really asking them is for input on your brand new marketing message. Hey, I just got this testimonial. Do you think it's any good? What do you like about it? And might be a way. Or you can, once you've got it established, or if you're talking to people who aren't friends and family and aren't current former clients, you can simply say, hi, I'm Taylor Sunderhouse, and I help business owners keep their technology running safely and smoothly. Here's a recent testimonial from somebody. And then your next thing might be a self-assessment. We are not going to have time to build. Maybe we'll have another episode on that. But giving people a way to quickly and easily self-assess whether they need you is a pretty good marketing piece because it helps them be smarter and it gives them the work of figuring out if they're a good customer for you. And it makes them feel, it proves that you're an expert because you gave them the self-assessment, but it proves to them just how bad things are for themselves. So maybe we'll do another show sometime on how to make a self-assessment for folks. But that could be something you can distribute pretty widely. You know, are you at risk of cyber attack? Here, check these five settings on your computer. Are you currently infected with ransomware and don't know it yet because it hasn't finished doing what it's going to do to you before they drop the hammer? You know, here's a way to check. What should you have in place for I'm making stuff up. Are you eating these five foods that are dangerous for you? Clickbait headline. Yes. But you might actually have something to share on that front if you were an actual expert on that. So I'm not. For me, it would be, you know, are you delegating enough to your subordinates? You know, here's three ways to tell. Do you know for a fact you're not delegating enough to your subordinates? It's probably one of these three causes. And here's how to find out which one it is. But then I would talk about why this is important to you. Gosh, if only you delegated more, you'd have these things, but you've got these symptoms. Da-da-da-da. What are the symptoms of not delegating enough? Well, it's like, oh my God, that's me. Remember, you're leading with them and their symptoms. Right. And then you might also give them some value. So you get the message out, you get it out on your website, you get a simple website up quickly and easily with, I don't know, Taylor, you're the expert on that.
So with a website, a website can be very simple. It can also be very complex. Mm-hmm. You don't, in this point in the journey, Tom, you don't need to spend ample amount of money on a website. Actually, almost nothing on the website.
Yeah.
Depending on what service you go with.
Going from zero website to a website is very, very hard. And you want to make it as easy as possible on yourself. And that means you do not spend $10,000 on a custom website.
Yeah, you don't need it at this point. Your website at this point should be nothing more than the same information you would put on a printed flyer.
Right.
In my opinion.
And by the way, it's actually very common and quite acceptable to have a one-page website that has different sections and the little menu at the top where it says, you know, about our services and, you know, testimonials and pricing and whatever the little headers are. It just scrolls people down to that section of the big single page.
Right. So
very common, very acceptable, easy to set up.
Google Sites is a free resource that can do it.
Yeah. Google Sites is free.
Wix has a free version. GoDaddy, they don't have a free version, but you're talking, you know, anywhere between $9 and $11 a month.
You should be able to get a good enough website up for no more than $20 a month, and possibly quite a bit less, and even free if you go Wix or Google Sites.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And once it's up, you can always make it better.
Right.
But get it up. And if you're comfortable writing, we'll have an episode one of these days on how to write an article quickly with quality. Get some posts up. Get some testimonials up. You mentioned posting articles that other people have written, news stories. You can post in a blog. Hey, I just read this, you know, opening paragraph, link to the article. And then here's why this would be worth your reading. And that's activity. That's a website that might attract some eyeballs.
Yeah. And then Tom, with a website, you know, I always say improve the website, as your business improves or get better. Mm-hmm. Don't make the website ahead of your business. And what I mean by that is don't spend $10,000 now because your business ain't at that level yet. You know, when you're generating, you know, $500,000 a year, or you're generating substantial numbers in sales and income, then you can think about, you know, maybe spending a little more, investing a little more on a fancier website. But at this point, Tom, it's more about generating the business.
And there'll be exceptions to that. But again, this is why this is guidance, not advice, right? You know, 95% of people, 80 to 90% of the time, you just don't need anything that fancy when you're getting your business off the ground and onto the internet.
Yep. And basically someplace for somebody to find the information, bottom line, information.
Because when they get your brochure or they hear about you, or they see that you're speaking at the Rotary, or you hand them a business card, one of the first things people do is they look for you on LinkedIn and they look for your website. If your website doesn't exist, It makes them think you don't exist.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you look like a scammer. It makes them question you, question your seriousness, question your reality. Are you even a business? If you have a website with a couple of testimonials, you've got a LinkedIn profile that's got more than 10 contents, it may be a photo, then you start to look like a real person. And by the way, that's what I do when I am thinking about working with somebody, is I check their website and I check their LinkedIn. Those are the two places I go.
Yeah, and mine didn't work at first when Tom checked it.
His email address. I took the back half of the email address, everything after the at sign, plugged that in to see if there was a website there. And it came back as basically, yeah, there's no website here. This is just for email, kind of an error message. And I'm like, well, that's not very promising.
Yeah, but
he made a positive impression on me that I went ahead and kept the dialogue with him. I told him about it. And so he's fixed it since then. But
it turns out, as an IT guy, stuff like that can nip you in the butt. And it turns out I made changes a while back and it resulted in that. And I didn't realize that. So
didn't realize that it had gone from website visible to website not visible, which is another reason to occasionally look at your website as an outsider or invite somebody else to look your site over, look at your marketing messages, give you an honest opinion.
Yeah. Tell me what's wrong or what you think is wrong.
Right. Yeah. So that takes us to the end. So what we've covered, I'll just recap. What is marketing? It's a one-to-one messaging that leads to sales conversations. We'll talk about sales conversations another time. What does it do? It resonates with target buyers and repels non-buyers. It sets correct expectations, so you don't have to fix all that during the sales conversation. And it emotionally appeals to the buyer's aspirations or their discomforts and pains, their needs. What works in terms of marketing? Things like articles, interviews, web pages dedicated to talking about the customer and their symptoms and problems, and a little something on how you address it. So that when people are searching online for their symptoms, because that's what people do. People with headaches go to Google and type in headache. They don't type in aspirin or acupuncture. If you're talking about the headaches, your stuff will show up for them. What also works is social proof, things like testimonials. What do you want to avoid? Long discourses about your secret process or your own biography. Anything that's not about the buyer and their problems or aspirations. How do you craft a good enough message? Make sure you're talking about, what do you do for your buyer? Who are they and what do they need? The fishing line. I help people of all ages with their basic dental needs. I help mid-career women who want to find love. I help small business owners keep their technology working safely and smoothly. It's just who's the buyer and why are they there? That's a fishing line and that's a great start. How to get a testimonial. We talked about the five questions you ask to make a short story version of a testimonial. And then we talked about how to get your message out. And that's our guidance for this week.
That is. And I think it's good. And I think, I don't know about any other business owner out there, but it kind of has my mind turning a little bit and it's going to have me jumping off the podcast and pounding away on the keyboard,
Great. Yeah. If you don't have a mailing list, you should. I'll tack that on here at the end. MailChimp has a free tier that if you're less than, I think, 1,000 or 1,500 names, it's free. Perfectly functional. No reason not to try that. You can always migrate the list off, although it's not easy to migrate from one mailer to another, and there's some costs and downsides. But I have no problem recommending or suggesting MailChimp as a possible opening place to do your marketing newsletter from if a newsletter is right for you.
Yep.
Okay. Right. Anything we need to say as a wrap up? You're very welcome. Thank you, Taylor. Obviously, next time we have on the schedule to talk about
Better client communication.
Much better client communication. Yes. And then it sounds like we've today talked about a few things like how to have a sales conversation that might make sense to go into. And we'll review the tape and see what we said and what we promised you so that we can make sure that our schedule reflects some of those ideas. And we'd like to know your ideas. What are you working on? What are you struggling with? What are you looking for help with that you haven't gotten solved yet that maybe we should do an episode on? Because we'd love to do that for you.
Oh, yes. And don't forget, you can subscribe to our podcast anywhere you get your podcasts, including iHeartRadio. And if you want to see the video version of this podcast, it's available on YouTube. All the links are in the description of both the audio and video form of this podcast. Once again, Tom, thank you for your time. It's always a pleasure getting together every other week with you. And to you all the listeners, thank you for subscribing. And